Hey there, Coach. Coach Will Love here. We have a great episode for you, but before we start, I wanted to let you know that the Idaho Basketball Coaching Podcast now has a newsletter. The newsletter has a bunch of great resources, including drills and concepts that I use with my program. It also includes write-ups to help you become a better coach. To subscribe to the newsletter, go to coachingidaho.substack.com. There, you'll also find an archive of past newsletters. Thanks for listening, and let's start talking some basketball. We are fortunate to have Drew Dunlop on today's episode. Dunlop is a co-founder of the Pro Lane, a developmental facility in Wisconsin that works with players at all levels. Dunlop has coached around the world and is recognized for his modern approach to training. At the Pro Lane, he helps design training environments that allow players to explore solutions that transfer to the game. Coach Dunlop, thanks for talking some basketball with us today. How's everything in Wisconsin?
Thank you for having me, Will. It's going well. We're getting sunshine. It's spring. AAU season's kicking off. It's a good time.
First off, I think, probably a lot of listeners have maybe heard of you, but I just want you to kind of go through your experience from a player kind of learning in a traditional development environment, and then kind of your path to what you do today there in Wisconsin.
Sure. Yeah. Growing up, I was a multi-sport athlete, but basketball just spoke to me. It was my thing. It was what it kind of centered my life around in a lot of ways. So, I was that kid that would buy DVDs and try to mimic moves and try all these different drills and spend hours and hours outside on my own, working on my game. Right. But, I was good, but what I was working on didn't always transfer to my games. And that always stuck with me as a young child going through getting into middle school and then high school. I was a kid that outworked a lot, but didn't get that transfer to game day results, which is how you're evaluated as a player, right? No one ever gets deals and contracts based off of a one-on-0 practice highlight tape, right? It happens in the real games. And so that stuck with me. And I played college, D3, low level. And right after college, got into coaching. And again, I kind of was going off of my traditional coaching background, trying to teach kids how to do things, one specific technique, very, explicit instructions, and, the same challenges and obstacles happening to the players that I was working with, right? We were working on all this. They looked great in practice and training and sessions, but did not transfer to the game. And that's kind of where it put me down a rabbit hole to try and search for an answer, because I knew there was a disconnect. I just knew there was something out there. And, I was fortunate enough to come across Rob Gray's book, How We Learned to Move During COVID. And that really, that swung open a door that's been open ever since. And we've been chasing it, trying to be the best version of the CLA and ecological dynamics approach as possible.
What allowed you to remove kind of that ego part of coaching that dictates everything needs to be perfect while still having the confidence to try something completely different that ultimately you might end up scrapping?
That's a challenge, because I came up, coaches were the holder of all the information. It was coach centric. That's all I knew. And so I felt like if I wasn't sitting there telling players what to do, giving feedback every rep, I wasn't doing my job, right? But eventually, you read enough of the research, you're introduced to enough, you understand that that's not how it works, right? As a player myself, I would have loved if a coach asked me like, hey, what would you like to work on? Or what are you seeing in this instance? What are you picking up on, right? That co-creation aspect to it all. That didn't happen. So then I was like, okay, I need to be that. I need to go down that route. And it is tough because obviously in the private sector, you're paid to work with these kids, these players. And so the perception of a parent or an agent or a coach sitting back on the sidelines, watching you, not really engaging every single rep and more so sitting back, asking the player questions, raises a lot of red flags because you only know what you know. And so if you came from a traditional background, you're going to see that and be like, "That, what am I paying for?" Right? Like literally just rebounding. But there's a lot to it. I always say all of my work, all of the the time spent and energy is in thinking about how are we going to design that session. And then when I finally get to that and I've created these problems for our players, then my job is to sit back and observe, because I need to be able to pivot on the fly and adapt if certain guys are struggling with things or the challenge point's too high, too low. It's a constant flux. But that is where the art of all of this coaching comes in.
So I kind of think of the Leo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at the screen. Yeah, this is it. So when did you have that? Have you had that point, or when did that happen that you were just like, yes, this is what I was thinking. This is what I was envisioning.
I don't think it was a specific moment, but I do remember sitting back during COVID, and we had a long week of workouts and a bunch. We were rolling from like 9 in the morning till 4 or 5 in the afternoon, back to backs. And I remember thinking about the engagement factor from that week and how there was never an off day. There was never a day where guys came in and like, oh, we have to be in here again. I really don't feel like working out. I'm tired. They're engaged the whole week. And it was because we had switched over to more of these setting problems, allowing the players to explore and not putting players in boxes and telling them they have to do things a certain way. And it was more so they're doing their own thing and, you know, we're there to help guide them. And I just remember thinking back to that was a great week. And, you know, this is something like I know as a player, I would have loved this. Like this would have helped me get to the next level. So that's kind of where I was like, there's no going back.
I guess a big changing point for me was when I started thinking about the environment. And so, you know, that ecological approach that's brought up by people like Alex Sarama and you. So, you know, that was a big turning point because all of a sudden it was like, okay, let's create these environments. So how do you go about creating environments that you know will transfer to the game?
It starts from film study, right? Obviously there's commonalities at all levels. Things that happen frequently, you know, scenarios and situations. So it starts with that. And then from there, you kind of, what are the main problems that happen within that? One of my resources lately has been a gentleman by the name of Greg Sauders, who is in MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I believe. And so he's always talking about what is the one behavior that unlocks all other behaviors. So the one behavior that has to emerge that unlocks all these other. So I try to look through that filter, right? I try to set these problems. I figure out, okay, what's the one thing that needs to happen for all the other dominoes to fall? And then you just play out of games on that. Maybe, you know, based off of numbers, is it a one-on-one? Is it a one-on-two? Is it a, you know, all the way to fives? But it's figuring out, okay, we're going to set this problem. And I have an idea of some of the solutions that might be functional within this, but also I want to see how these players interact individually. If it's 3-on-3, how are they interacting as a team, as a unit, right? The shared affordance aspect. And so it's just really just sitting back and being open to what is going to emerge in that situation. Like I said, I have two or three that I know are functional based off of my study and understanding all levels of the game and seeing success. But there's also these players that come in and they come up with a solution that I would have never even thought of. And that's what I love, because I learn from that. And I want to learn and I want to be challenged. I want to find out different ways, because, you know, they always talk about there's more than one way to do things, right? And there may not be 1,000, but there sure are 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 things that can happen that are functional based off of that individual player interacting within the environment.
So one of the things that we have discussed is that you've got whiteboards all over your facility, yeah. Right? And you're just jotting stuff down?
All the time. Yeah, I got them everywhere. I had tons of whiteboards. I have funded Amazon quite a bit in terms of buying all these whiteboards, you know, small, big, all that. But it's like you never know when an idea is going to come, an inspiration. So I want to have stuff available to me that I can jot down and then I just, you know, transfer to my notes later.
All right. So as a business, you're working with players at a bunch of different levels. And so they're needing certain things. And then probably within those groups, you know, those individuals, they're needing certain things that are different than the other players that might fall into that level of play. So how are you differentiating the learning during these development sessions?
It really comes down to feedback and that observation piece, right? It's observing how each player is individually interacting and finding moments to speak in sound bites to kind of prompt them, right? And the big focus this past year for me has been, instead of you know, again, it's like removing the ego. And I'm not trying to tell them stuff. I want to ask them questions, right? And it's asking them questions in a way that helps guide their intentions and attention. And so that's really like the big focus. It's understanding how to speak, how to ask questions in a quick 15-second soundbite while a player is off waiting for the next rep, right? And just constantly just going around, making sure each player is getting feedback, you know, at different intervals throughout the session.
Can you give an example of some questions you might ask? Let's say a kid is shooting and their shot is really flat. I mean, what kind of questions might you ask to kind of prompt that development?
First thing I'll say is like, how have you been missing? Right. Ask them, how have you been missing? And, you know, okay, it's been short. I said, okay, think about how you can calibrate from that. Right. That's just information. Like, we try to take the emotional aspect out of the miss. It's just information. And they know, how can you adapt to get further back in the rim? And they'll kind of talk through some of the stuff and they'll start to work it. And if they're not getting it, I'll let them go 3, 4, 5, maybe another 6 shots. Go again. Okay. How have you been missing? Have you been getting further back? Are you now right, left? So it's just constantly just asking them to think about and talk about what they noticed in those shots. Without me telling, hey, you need to drop your hips, you need to get, you know, speed the ball up, right? Try to have them come to it. And if they're not getting it, then maybe we'll switch the drill up, mix up an activity where now they're focused on ball speed, right? Where they're trying to move the ball ahead of their body. So it's just, you know, a constant dance of, you know, are we adjusting, are we calibrating in the right direction? Another, you know, example would be if a player is driving, right, getting into bad spots. It's like, hey, ask question, what have you noticed about when you drive to the baseline, how your teammates react to that, right? Are there other places you could go? Is there more space in a different direction? Is there something you could do instead of picking your dribble up, right? So it's just trying to cue them up on some possibilities. And it may not be right. They may continue to, you know, have some failure within that, but at least they're interacting with that information and trying to find different solutions, right? And it's, again, it's that whole guiding aspect, right? I'm not trying to tell you the answer. I'm trying to guide you to find something that's functional for you.
Next question for you is, how do you incorporate technology into the kind of this holistic training, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Well, we have the NOAA system. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So it's a camera that tracks above the rim, can tell you, is the ball right, left? Is it, you know, shallow, deep in terms of depth, the arc, the entry angle into the rim? A lot of times we'll use that more so left, rights, and the depth aspect. We really don't use it much for arc, but, you know, we'll use it in terms of shot margins where, hey, a player might be missing right or left extreme swings. All right. And so we're going to cue them up on how to shoot a straight ball. So we might say, hey, you have to hit these shots between -2 and +2. So that'd be 2 inches to the right, 2 inches to the left, right? And if you make it and it's 3 or -3, it doesn't count. So it only counts within our shot margins. All right. Now, most people don't have the NOAA. So easy way to do that is you got to hit swishes, only swishes, or it has to be a brad, back rim and downs. We use a lot of film. And I think film is a really underutilized tool because it's not so much you're trying to show them what to do, you're showing them what it could look like, right? It's just trying to spark the idea like, hey, here's how this player solves in this situation. Maybe it works for you, maybe it doesn't, but at least it gives you an idea of like something you could iterate off of. And I think that's a really valuable tool when you're working with kids of all ages. You know, we're talking pro players down to sixth grade kids, fifth grade. They watch and they try to emulate, right? It's the same thing. They're just trying to iterate off of something that a player is doing, but adapt it to what is functional for them.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're going to do with our varsity group next year is that they're going to have to watch some basketball and identify a player that they want to watch and just kind of come back to us and tell us some things that they noticed about this player's game.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so powerful. Just ask a player, hey, pick one player that you think you play like or you're similar to. And then, you know, tell me 3, 4 things that you noticed about how they are playing that you could try to take and start to build into your game.
So I noticed on your website that you had a winter session that that focused on modern game skills. And so, first of all, you know, and we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about these, but, you know, why such an emphasis on that?
I think because it's not being done, right? You look at most workouts, player has the ball in hand 90% of the time, when the reality of it is that's actually inverted, right? Most players are playing in space. They don't understand when to cut, when to hold. They don't understand how to set screens that actually create advantages and overs. They don't understand how to relocate it off of drives to balance the floor, right? So it's like you have to start putting these players in these situations, recreating them, allowing them to have failure and success in it so that they can start to adapt their game to the needs that they're going to have, right? Because you may be the guy in sixth grade getting a ton of shots, but come eighth grade, you might have to play a different position. And now you have no idea what to even do because you've missed out on all those opportunities to play off the ball and to be a cutter and to go rebound. So kind of feel it's our need to, we have to start to create this stuff and give these kids experiences in areas that they're not getting. We're supplementing kind of everything else they're doing, which is kind of the approach we take with everything we do.
You know, one of the things I noticed during the NCAA tournament was when Illinois played UConn, and their approach was to attack the basket, and Klingon just, you know, like had a heyday as far as rim protection. Then we fast forward and UConn is playing Purdue, and, you know, you can see a lot of variation in the finishing, and you know, you would just show the slow-mos of what those UConn kids were doing in regards to making decisions in the air. So can you kind of talk about the process that you guys go through to get kids so that they're not just doing, this is the one way to finish?
Oh yeah. That's a big thing, right? Finishing is key. So a big thing, what we do is like one of our concepts is what we call short reps. So we start players inside the 3-point arc where you've already created an advantage, right? So we're taking that component out. It's essentially task simplification, right? We're removing all that advantage creation. And now you have a drive and we're trying to concentrate the focus in the paint, trying to find a rim solution, right? So we might start on ball defender, shoulder to shoulder with the driver, and the driver is a step outside the paint. So now they're getting into the paint one-on-one, right? They start to get comfortable with that. Now you change the positioning of the on-ball defender. Maybe they're a step in front, right? Jamming their hips. And they'll have to figure that out. And then you add in a second defender, a rim protector, someone rotating over, maybe early, maybe late, maybe in really, really good position. Or now you start to add, you know, stunt defenders, right? So they can't move, their feet are on the floor, but they have active hands trying to disrupt and dislodge that ball as that guy's driving through, trying to figure out, where's the window to finish? Where's my space? How do I get to it? Right. So it's, again, it just goes back to the philosophy of put these players in the situations, allow them to experience success and failure and figure out what works for them based off of different defenders, length, physicality, numbers disadvantage, right? Late clock where you have to figure something out or else it's a turnover, those kind of things, right? It's just, again, give the players as many opportunities to explore that stuff so that they can start to build in and adapt their game.
You talked a little bit about this previously, but you know, I think when people hear the CLA mentioned, they think it's like this very complex thing. And like when we're talking about finishing, it's just adding a defender, right? I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, when in doubt, add a defender. It's just that simple. Right. Because that is going to change. Right. Because a player is going to create movement solutions based off of the information from that defender. And really, I mean, guided defenders are great, but the more you can kind of make these players unscripted and uncooperative, which is a term that I learned from another MMA coach, is that you have to have freedom to make decisions on defense and offense. And the more you do that, the more benefit you will get from all of this.
So let's talk a little bit about the off ball skills now. And so I think one of the key things for my program is we've done a really good job of understanding how to use and set ball screens, off ball screens. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on that. And then, you know, the biggest thing too is that it's, you watch some of our film and it's not perfect, but it's effective. Like they get, the kids are starting to understand, I don't have to do it at this angle. The player is this way. I need to do it at this angle. So talk a little bit about what you guys do to teach those, the using and setting up, setting ball screens.
The easiest way, we do a live screener. So we'll have, let's say it's a 1v1 setup with a live screener. It might be a short shot clock. We actually did this the other day, 6 seconds. Live screener is going to clean up that offensive player. And we'll, like say in that example, we'll take away the paint. They cannot go to the basket. So they have threes or mid-range. So it really forces the live screener and the offensive player to figure out ways to create an advantage to get a look for a decent to high quality shot under duress with a 6 second shot clock. And that's really where we'll start. We'll allow them to figure that out, right? And guys start chirping at each other if they're not setting great screens, and you know, but it's like, that's what it is, right? And so the next layer to that is we'll do what we call screen assist. So let's say that same scenario, you got shooter in the corner, on ball defender, you got your live screener, create a great look. He shooter comes off, hits a three. So now not only does that offensive player get three, but the screener gets three. So we're trying to incentivize multiple efforts, energy, engagement, and trying to set great physical screens so that they're working on that part of their game and they still can score and be engaged in the competitive aspect.
So one of the things in Alex's BDT offense is that it was, we taught it through a lot of defensive coverages. And so there'd be A, B, C. Are you doing kind of scripted stuff like that, or is it just more organic in your sessions?
We'll do things where we'll say you can't go under, like everything has to be over. Or if it's a three rep burst, you can only switch once, you can only go under once. Right? You try to take away some of their options, right? Again, the game's going to throw a ton at you, so we try to keep it as random as possible. But I think the real value, again, just becomes, you know, letting them experience all of that in the chaos of that small-sided game and figure it out.
So one of the issues that comes up, especially at the beginning of the season when we've got new kids playing varsity basketball, is they struggle with the cutting. You know, they're used to coming from the junior high, and just, you know, it's usually like the top player on the junior high team just has permission to cut whenever they want because they're usually getting the ball. Versus all of a sudden at the varsity level, it's like, okay, you have to be careful when you cut because you're taking away some space sometimes. So how do you go through the process of teaching kids when to cut and when not to cut, and what to do off their cut?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different situation because, you know, as a private training facility, obviously these players aren't with us year round, right? So they're all going to their different teams that have different offensive and defensive systems and rules on cutting and whatnot. So we try to just keep it to the commonalities, right? Where if there's an advantage, you know, if your defender turns their head and you can burn it, hey, we want you to burn it. But the one thing we'll always say is if you cut, you need to either exit or become a screener, right? So you can't just cut, sit there, take up space, and then it just, you know, clogs gaps. Right. So we try to emphasize that. And in terms of activity design and drills, you know, we'll say, hey, you can only score off of cuts right now. And we'll play a 1v1 off a back door. And then we'll add a rim protector, and we'll add in, you know, we'll build it out the threes, or we'll go right to fours. And we'll say, hey, there has to be a cut trigger. And it doesn't necessarily mean you score off the cut. It could be a cut assist where you cut, you open up a gap, and now that guy can turn the corner, drive, and get to the rim. All right. It could be a cut, you receive it, and now you kick out for a spray out three. So we're just trying to have them say, hey, it's got to be activated off of a cut. Like anything with this stuff, it becomes about what do you emphasize, what are you incentivizing, and what is the scenario that you are kind of the problem that you're setting within that.
How important is defense to you and your training?
Very important. I forget who said it, but I heard it like, I don't know, about a year ago, and it was something along the lines of, you know, no matter what time you spend on defensive development, it's worth the return on investment, because that is essentially 50% of the time you're on the floor, right? And I think it gets bypassed a lot. It gets overlooked. And so we do a lot of stuff where, you know, blocks are worth two in any kind of offensive setting. Or we're saying, hey, this is a defensive-minded game where you have to get a certain number of stops before you can exit out and play offense. or we'll do just totally themed defensive point games where offense, you score, you actually earn the right to then get on defense to score. And that's how you can win the game. You know, I think initially players weren't too receptive to it, but we've got guys now that have been in our program for 3-4 years, and they understand the value of it. They understand why we're working on X out rotations and closeouts and verticality at the rim, and understanding when to stunt and how to stunt, because that stuff pays off. Those players now can go into games and impact, and they don't even have to have the ball on offense. They might get 3-4 shots, but they're going to play impressive, aggressive defense. They're going to take away, you know, high value scoring opportunities for the opponents, and they're going to ultimately impact the stat sheet. And it may not show up, but they are impacting winning.
I know every coach appreciates hearing stuff about rebounding or how coaches are teaching rebounding. So what do you do there in regard to kind of getting the kids in that rebounding mindset?
We'll play some different games, some different starts. We'll start out of a contested shot sometimes where shooter begins, they're working off a live dribble, maybe in the defender. Let's say the shooter's at the wing, defender's at the elbow. And as soon as the shooter picks up their dribble to shoot, the defender at the elbow closes out and tries to block it. And then all the other offensive players are spaced out, maybe strong corner, weak side wing. And on that raise of the shot, they can crash. And if offense gets the ball, they keep it. They get two more possessions. If defense rebounds it, they kick it out. They clear the three, and now they steal those possessions. So it's just, again, how do you incentivize and what are you emphasizing? You know, we'll start, you know, one-on-one games where it starts off of a shot and you got to sprint and get to the rebound, and whoever gets it gets offense, right? It's very simple in a 1v1 setting. Some of the stuff we'll do in finishing, we call it paint touch live boards, is in any kind of finishing drill on the drive, on the shot, if offense misses it and it's a live board, it's anyone's ball. So now that rep is not done until it's scored. So the defender can rebound it, get it, and go right back up. Offense can get it, go right back up. They steal the points, and they earn the right then to go back on offense. It's not something you can do all the time because it gets very competitive, pretty physical. But you know, it's one of those things that you want to ramp it up and engage guys. Like that's what we go to. And again, it's just the mentality of it. Like it's not done until there's a score.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about actions and triggers that you guys are teaching, and just first of all, like how are you determining, okay, what are some triggers that we're going to teach these kids?
Part of it is, again, goes back to watching film, understanding how teams are getting looks, how they're generating, you know, speaking to coaches like yourself or asking questions like what are the main triggers you're getting to, like what are some actions that create the advantage for you? So it's understanding the common sets and triggers. And then it's just layering it into our guys' sessions, understanding like, hey, today we're playing 3v3 and it's all going to be off of, you know, whatever, a Korver, double Korver away, right? Or we're playing out of a Spain pick and roll, compress the space, right? So we try to introduce the terms. Maybe it's a blind pig action. We were doing that the other day, introducing guys to, hey, if you're being pressured up the line, next guy flashes a space, we kick it, and now you can cut off, we can go to DHO, right? So just giving them opportunities to experience that. Because a lot of times, some of these kids, they don't have that experience with different sets. So maybe they're playing in a high school program and it's literally all pick and roll, or it's dribble weave or Princeton, right? And that's all they really know. But it's at the next level, they're going to go on. You have to understand how to play, how to space, how to find advantages within all this.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one thing that's been a benefit to us is, you know, our kids are able to identify spacing and they understand gap creation. And so, you know, I mean, how are you going through that in your development sessions?
Again, it just comes down to what you incentivize and emphasize, right? So we'll put players in spots, and our guys, for the most part, understand the value of creating gaps and understanding, hey, you know, you want to try and find floor balance. You know, if you catch it and you rip away, are we doing double drives? You know, it's understanding what makes sense, where the most value comes from within the game.
You know, you obviously spend your time on the court, but how much time are you spending off the court just getting prepared so that you can continue to grow the pro lane?
I love it. I really have no hobbies. It's family time or basketball. And you know, to be honest, the most work I do is any kind of like the admin email stuff. which is, you know, few and far between. So long days, I would not trade it. I always tell people it's a lab. It's rare you get an opportunity to do what you love and do it in a way that, you know, I never have to look over my shoulder and I have the freedom to try stuff. And not all of it works for sure. A lot of failures, but also the wins, you can choose what to focus on and spend your time on. So it's a passion. It's maybe an obsession. I don't know, but I love it.
Yeah. Don't we all? So I appreciate your time. I just got a couple more questions for you. Can you take us through the process of like idea to, okay, I'm actually going to implement this in a session?
So I'm really big on notes. I spent some time a couple years back through a system called Tiago Forte with PARA. So it's projects, areas, resources, archive in terms of how you structure notes. So that's like the basis. Like my organization system is how it goes from what I capture. So I see something and I capture it. All right. And then from the capture, now I'm trying to make connections to ideas we've had, other notes I have, you know, the themes, what's commonality between that. And then from that, it's distilled to, okay, here are some scenarios, some ideas, some constraints and starts that we're going to play around with. And then once that goes through, we'll film it, kind of watch it, break it down. More often than not, the initial run is good. There's some validated learning to it. We'll make some adjustments and it'll go into what I call my take twos. So anything that we're going to try that was a great start, but we need to adjust some things. And then once it makes it through that, it goes into our film library and the process repeats itself.
So can you tell us a couple of teams or coaches that you've been really impressed by over the last month or two?
Well, obviously with March Madness, watching UConn, right? Just how they move the ball. Always interested in watching, you know, how players make decisions on the catch. So UConn's been fun to watch. Watch a lot of NBA. I've really enjoyed the last month, been looking at a lot of Paul George, how he's creating space off the dribble, live stuff. Recently was looking at screening. So on-ball screening tactics, Lively with Dallas in terms of how to create advantages for ball handlers. So that's really kind of like, I would say the three big buckets I've been exploring as of late. But it always kind of toggles between a bunch of different topics. You know, as I get ideas, I just add it to one, this long note that I have. And it's just like, hey, we're going to go to the next one. And so it's never ending.
So let's talk about you and the future of the pro lane. I mean, what are you focused on in your development as a coach?
I would say the next piece for us is continuing to double down on some unique programming. Again, talking about it earlier, the stuff that players aren't getting experience with. So really trying to be that outside the box a little bit. A big edge that I feel is yet to really be leveraged by us as a company is the mental aspect. So, you know, talking about next play speed, how do you recover from mistakes? How do you calm yourself in the midst of chaos? That's a big research topic for myself personally, as I try to have more for the players that work with us. You know, something that can be done real time in the midst of missing one or two free throw, and you got to step back up and you got to get that next one because your team needs it, right? So it's real time stuff that can happen in a 10 second span, right, within a game. So that's a big area that I'm focused on right now. And then company wise, you know, continue to build out our coach education. I'm going to start doing some more bigger leagues and projects like that, where it's more so a camp based approach. And the coach education and traveling a bit and exploring globally the game.
Yeah, I've appreciated what you're doing with slapping glass in regards to kind of showing some of the things that you're doing and then the applications to the game. That's pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, that's been a very fun project. Great guys, Dan and Pat. Really appreciate the opportunity. Like I said, it's just fun to have that project to really dive into, you know, spend some time putting it together and then watching people's feedback from it, right? And the value that they're getting from it. it's one of those things that motivates us to continue to keep doing what we're doing and explore outside the box.
I apologize because I got one more question since I got you on the line here. And I just wanted to ask, when you're going into a development session, because I think this might be like a scary part for coaches is like, making that jump into the pool on that end. So how are you kind of approaching when you're working with a group in regard to kind of planning on what you're going to focus on?
Great question. I think initially when I first started, like I said, I came from a traditional approach where everything was, I had, we're going to do this for 5 minutes, this for 10, this, it didn't matter. And I went through and it didn't matter if we were getting it. It was successful. It was a failure. It was worthwhile. It didn't matter. I was following that. So now it's loosely assembled. So we have a theme, might be playing off the ball, might be, handles, might be pressure. The theme will go one or two activities, we'll start. It might be a large group, so it might be a 3 or 4v4 type action, and we'll build it down to ones or vice versa. We might invert it and start with ones and build up to twos and threes. But there's only two or three activities, and then from there, it's the observation part. It's saying, hey, this is not working. We're going to pivot, scratch this. And that's really – it is scary. I definitely, when I first started going down this path, that was a tough hurdle, but you also just trust in it. And if you just allow yourself to remove that pressure and you just watch and observe, you'll quickly figure out what's working, what isn't. And before you know it, the session's up.
Yeah. And I think one of the things in our practices gone to more of our just kind of, I guess, a feel and watching and seeing what we need to work on that, we will in the middle of practice say, okay, we're going to, let's try this. And then if it doesn't work, our kids are getting used to us just saying, okay, that didn't work. We're going to try this now. And they're just, there isn't kind of, they aren't going, oh my gosh, this person doesn't know anything. They just, I think they appreciate that. Okay. This coach realizes it's not working. Let's move forward.
Yeah. I mean, have you found that's led to an increased buy-in from your players?
Yeah, I have. And so, they know that we're, I think, kind of paying attention and watching what they're doing and basing a lot of what we're doing off of that. And while they might not verbalize it, a high school kid, it might be hard, but know that they appreciate it because, their willingness to jump in and just say, okay, we're going to pivot here real quick. And instead of doing this, try this. Okay. This is working. And then we'll go with this for a little while. And I think they appreciate that.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, it all goes back to that co-creation thing where it's like you have the ability to stand up in front of them and say, hey, that's my bad. It wasn't working. Let's go with something else.
Definitely. And then the other cool thing about it is that like, if a coach comes over to me, one of the assistants, and says, hey, we're having an issue here, I just tell, okay, let's make a drill. Like, think about it for 5 minutes. Let's make a drill and then we'll get back to it. So I think it's been a lot of fun for both our players and our assistant coaches because, I'm trying to empower them to, when you see something, let's try to correct it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the value of autonomy and ownership. I mean, it goes a long way, both as players and coaches.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun and I look forward to seeing what you guys do in the future. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate the opportunity.